In this episode, you'll discover the three simple steps to break the good boy, bad boy pattern that disappoints and depresses your wife while destroying her trust in your leadership. So welcome in, Heroic Husbands, to the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is your one podcast for learning everything you need to know to become the marriage-transforming hero of your relationship. What's in it for you? To stay listening to the end of this episode, well, the three specific benefits you'll gain are: number one, you'll become aware of the one most destructive pattern husbands show up in marriage with. Number two, you'll know how to recognize the danger signs that lead up to an inevitable rupture and ultimately the creation of this marriage-destroying pattern. Number three, you'll discover the one way your wife can help you in breaking this pattern. Teamwork is insanely next level practice in this. Touch base with yourselves, guys. Do you have a pattern of placing your fullest focus on your marriage post major conflict? Then you find yourself being a good boy for a couple of days. You might even carve out a couple of weeks, and then you find yourself inevitably sliding back, crawling back to your old conflict causing ways. Same shit, different day. This was me on repeat for years. 12 years. My first 12 years of marriage. Maybe the first portion, you know, you can get about a year and a half, 2 years to say it comes from biological evolutionary development that we sort of keep our resistance patterns away from our new partner. Possibly it's from evolutionary terms, there is that argument that, hey, it helps in the procreation realm. You know, if you brought your shadow side immediately, we wouldn't get married, we wouldn't procreate, it wouldn't be good for the species. I don't know, whatever, I don't really go fully with that, I have heard that argument. But you won't see this pattern so much in the beginning of a relationship. And if it is there anyway from the start, it won't be as intense, as intensely felt as it is the further into marriage you go. What I know from speaking with hundreds of husbands around the planet is I've yet to have one guy that hasn't put his hand up, you know, literally or energetically in conversation with me saying, yeah, that pattern, man, like, it's the part where we start laughing on calls because it's so ridiculously obvious it's there. And because it's the one pattern that is almost universally prevalent in marriages with regards to husbands, it's possibly the highest leverage place in your marriage experience that you can put your awareness. When you iron out this pattern, everything comes better in your marriage. And I want to really get into this. Like, the possibly the most important part here is to reflect upon with open eyes just how costly this pattern is when you're unaware of it. I think the metaphor that really works the best for it is if you think about going up a mountain. You know, going up a mountain takes a lot of effort. Hence the, you know, climbing a mountain, getting to the top of Everest, you know, what is your Everest? We use all of these metaphors for success in life, for taking on challenges. Time and time and time again, we go back to the mountain. Because the mountain, we inherently know, even if you haven't hill walked or went mountain climbing, we know it takes a lot of time, a lot of energy. There's a great challenge to a human to get to the top of a mountain. And boy, oh boy, if marriage does not relate with the challenge, the focus, the tenacity, the discipline, all the core virtues of being a human being are required to maintain your focus, to maintain your presence, to maintain your discipline, to maintain your enthusiasm, man, from challenge to challenge on the way to, you know, the top that, well, maybe the top from a masculine perspective is when you die. And, you know, if your queen is there or not there, whatever, like the people around you, those that know you and loved you the best and witnessed you, yeah, you reached the top. You couldn't have wrung more love out. Well, this pattern is what ruptures any hope. Maybe not even of getting to your deathbed and wringing the love out. Like, having your marriage last to your deathbed, having your marriage have any sort of meaningful fulfillment and freedom for you, for your queen, for your kids, the next generations afterwards. But when you look at it from through the eyes of the mountain metaphor, there's a massive cost on the of the good boy, bad boy pattern. It's this post major rupture, major fight, major argument, your queen gets really upset, you get to the point where you have some rudimentary idea of why she's pissed off, why you believe she's pissed off, you eliminate that one thing or those 10 things that she like really hauled your ass on, and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to be on time, and I'm going to be more romantic, and I'm going to lead in the bedroom, and, you know, I'm not going to be grumpy around the kids. Okay, let's go. And in that moment, you feel motivated. Your whole nervous system are like, gung-ho, let's fucking do this. And have you found that, you know, the within the remorse phase, the conflict tends to tenderize our nervous systems? This is a really key point that I want all of you guys listening in. It's like that's when it's almost like conflict brings our humanity out. And what's our humanity? Our humanity as men and hey, women, like they just tend to be more connected to it. Our humanity is our emotional sensitivity, the feeling part, where when we're connected with the emotionality of what's actually happening. It's a catastrophic indication of how profoundly sick this modern society is that en masse as men, we need the rupture of conflict to tenderize our nervous systems into really feeling the level of disconnect that there is. But most guys will admit to themselves, to their queens, and that it's post-conflict that they really feel the pain of disconnect. And in the feeling and the empathizing of the sense of disconnect and, you know, their part in it, and touch base to you, speaking to you directly, do you find that it's in post-conflict that you come into connection with a deep, sincere desire to be a better man? That in that initial phase, you are sincerely wanting a part of you, you're in connection with a part of you that sincerely wants to do better, sincerely wants to break the pattern of screwing up on repeat. There's a part of you in that post-conflict tenderizing of your nervous system where you're like, you know, you might even tear up with your queen. Maybe you've shed tears both sides and there's a longing in you to get your act together long term. So there's that depth of sincerity. It's not a fake thing. And yet, we jump back into life and because we don't have the inner work tools, we don't understand our full psyche, we don't understand that we are all these diverse different parts, the motivational talk that we give ourselves, and we might, if you're like me, give, you know, big major motivational talks in front of your queen where like I was making big declarations, I'm going to be better, like I'm not going to go, this is not going to happen again, and again I was meaning it. Have you found that like you really mean what you're saying in those moments that you want to do better? Vast majority, if not every single guy I've spoken with, said, yeah, Mark, I'm really sincere in that moment. And yet, off we go back into life after making these massive declarations to ourselves, to our queen, to the universe. And then a couple of days later, a couple of weeks later, we end up going back to same shit, different day, and we don't even know why. But the mountain metaphor really brings it to why there's such a cost to your psyche and to your queen's psyche. And I would extend this to the psyches of your kids, because marital dysfunction, man, it's one of the elephants in the room when people come to, you know, a podcast about marriage, you know, one of the great challenges in modern life is, well, how do you do the parenting? And I actually think the greatest blind spot of conscious parenting these days is like really just stop placing the focus on the kids and altering the behaviors in our children's nervous systems. They're, when their nervous systems are acting up and being bold, they're really, it's just their nervous system mirroring back the discontent that their nervous system is picking up in their family home. And who's that down to? Mom and dad. End of story. You know, it's like, so the cost of, you know, you slide back to the bottom of the mountain and you declare to your queen, to yourself, and you're like, I'm going to be better. And then you get back up and you're like, okay, one foot after another, you get a good day, then another good day, and another few good days, and you're making progress and you're going back up to the top of the mountain. What happens when you inevitably slide back down is there is a massive disappointment felt within your queen's nervous system. Massive. And it gets worse and worse. Worse and worse means more and more intensely felt. The major risk is she can only allow her nervous system to feel the full pang of that disappointment for so long. The risk is she gets to the point where it's just not, she does not want to. Every wife, I believe, develops coping mechanisms to deal with that. They have to, because if 100% of husbands do it, well, 100% of wives pretty much have to form some way of coping with the disappointment. But at some point, they start looking elsewhere. At some point, their heart and soul goes, enough is enough. And if they do like my queen, it's like they, one of the coping mechanisms can be just dampen, just drop their standards and increase their tolerance. You know, it's not such a big thing, and I won't give you that much shit, so the rupture won't be as intense. It's a catastrophic pattern. And it all comes from us being good boy, good boy, good boy, and then bad boy. We rupture. We unleash our blame. We unleash our resentment, but in untidy ways. We're blaming our queen. We're blaming our kids. We're just pissy. We go into really deeply immature parts. And what's immaturity? Really, it's not owning all these multiple parts of us. And we lash out. You might shout. You might get really aggressive. A lot of you mightn't think you get aggressive, but if you ask your queens, do you perceive that? Do you experience me in those moments as being aggressive? You're going to get a lot more yeses coming back at you if you really land that as an honest inquiry to your wife. What happens is you get up to what you might feel is halfway up the mountain, and then the inevitable pattern break comes and you slide back down to the bottom. But your wife slides back down there with you, and your kids, they pick it up within nanoseconds, you know, of the first time that they're in the house with you at the breakfast table, dinner table, on the car on the way to work. They will pick up the discontent between you within nanoseconds. So everybody in your house slides back down with you. And until you break that pattern, you're leaving your kids, you're leaving your wife to rely upon coping mechanisms to shut their emotional system off, to sedate their nervous system, to find distraction. And it's catastrophic to the psychological well-being of your family. That motivationally, you do all of that effort to get to halfway up the mountain and then you slide back down. And for your own self-esteem, confidence cannot be built as a husband, as a lover, as a leader of your family, so long as this pattern remains intact. Good intentions, good intentions, good intentions, halfway up the mountain and you slide back down. That erodes your confidence over time. The cost is massive. So Let's go into the three steps. The three steps that are very practical. They're quite simple, and yet in their simplicity, the potency lies in their simplicity. You know, maybe some parts of you want to have like a real technical, in-depth, detailed, you know, solution placed in front of you. Mastery in any endeavor is, it's within the simplicity of the solution that you will find the greatest potency. One of the first reasons why, as men, we're unable to hold our pee in our britches emotionally when it comes to any bit of conflict is we don't know what we're fighting for in that moment. And when you don't know what you're fighting for, well, you're going to fight against. Mark that into your soul. When you don't know what you're fighting for, the only thing left in your nervous system's capacity, it has to channel that anger somewhere, is you're going to fight against. So the number one solution to breaking this pattern of good boy, good boy, good boy, and then flipping into like the Jekyll and Hyde going to bad boy is you set a vision that excites you. And those of you that want to get like simpler solutions or like, oh, well, hey, well, vision has nothing to do with it, Mark. She's been such a horrible thing with me. And I just want to, like, give me, it must be conversational. There must be, tell me about the conflict in it. Like, this doesn't work. I'm like, I'm giving you the mechanism to preventing the puddle of water coming on your wooden floor. I'm giving you the mechanism, which is this is how you fix the hole in the pipe underneath the floorboards. You set a vision that excites you. There's a masculine mantra that I use with clients one-on-one and in Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. I'm calling it Heroic Husband's Dojo. In the darkest of times, his vision lights the way. If you meet dark times, but you have no vision, your nervous system will channel the anger and it will go against something outside of yourself because your psyche does not have a vision that it's fighting for that is more important in that moment than any self-righteous BS that comes through your nervous system, that your awareness, oh, there's emotional intensity. Awareness just goes to the blame part of the mind. It's like your psyche, your heart and soul needs a predetermined vision that it knows, I will not sacrifice how far I've gotten up the mountain on the way to that incredible vision. I won't sacrifice it by sacrificing the connection that I have with my queen, the connection I have with my kids. I won't sacrifice and throw in the bin all the merit from the last 3-4 days, 3-4 weeks, whatever it is, whatever length of time there's been between this potential rupture and the last potential rupture. I don't want to put in the bin. I'm sick of putting in the bin all my good efforts by bringing down the entire stack of cards, bringing down the house intermittently. I won't do that anymore because I've got a vision that I want to go to. The masculine soul, we seek our freedom outside of ourselves in ways. That's a very important part. And the freedom inside ourselves. But the freedom inside ourselves, we self-implode when we don't have a vision in the whole life way that's worth putting the effort in. So set a vision that excites you. Otherwise, the resentment and regret will drive that self-righteous blame that we chuck at our queens. And you don't want to do that. You do not want to have to slide down. You want to get to the point where, you know, when you break the pattern, you put in the effort to walk 10% up the side of Mount Everest. You might slide down 1%, but you catch it, you pause, you breathe, you reflect, you have a direct conversation with your queen, you have a vision that's driving you, and then you move on. You iterate that, you're playing the infinite game of marriage. Point number two, me needs and we needs. One of the unspoken reasons behind that good boy, bad boy pattern is that high motivational drive that we feel post major rupture and conflict, we don't know how to sustain that beyond the level of necessity. Oh, she's really infinitely peed off with me. She's speaking the word divorce again, or whatever are the multiple things that your wife says to you in those moments. We find the motivation in the moment of necessity, but when the necessity goes, we don't have access to motivation. And what is motivation? It's emotion, the energy that puts into motion. One of the most unspoken, unmet needs of people in marriage, husbands and wives, is meeting our own needs, having a conscious, calm, assertive conversation about, hey, I have these needs as a human being. And then having a conversation about what we need. So I would set the vision first and foremost, because the vision will give you the power and it will help you prioritize, really analyzing and recognizing what you really need to meet that vision that excites you. Not only a vision for married, for outside of you, but for your married life. Bring it all in. So you will get really sincere about recognizing and meeting your own needs. When you do that, your nervous system and your body starts having the nourishment to help you keep moving. Moving without a buildup of frustration, without needing to rely on drive and pushing forward, pushing. And you get really into a head-led motivation, which really wears us down over time. And hence we get so edgy in a cyclical way. So that's one question to ask yourself. What would I need to nourish my nervous system and body to help minimize the buildup of frustration? The one thing I'd say, and this was a major thing for myself, I felt it was immoral to even focus on myself. I learned growing up, man, Mark, to survive, your way of surviving this weird ass fucking energetic ecosystem of your family is become ye focused. Focus on, and very much my mother focused, help her out, help dad out, help everybody else out. Please be a pleasing presence to everybody around you. And if you meet their needs, that's where you bring certainty, or as close to certainty as you can in your emotional day-to-day existence. So it's one thing to rationally go, hey, question what your needs are and go meet them, just own your needs in front of your queen. Well, they're, for most guys, that's an edgy challenge in and of itself. It might be one of the edgiest emotional challenges in marriage to go, hey baby, I've recognized I need more time by myself. Hey baby, I recognize I need more time with a bunch of guys. I'm gonna go playing golf. Hey baby, I recognize I need time to, pick up my guitar that I haven't played in 20 years and actually just get some me time. I've done other episodes on it. I feel the one key thing I'd like to say to you, if you don't feel you have the permission to do this, I can't give you permission, but here, I'm going to just pretend like I can. I give you permission to have a human need and go and own it with your queen. Whether she meets you in the first conversation of it, many queens are actually mad. That's part of what fierce feminine feedback is. He doesn't meet his own needs. God, just go have some time by yourself, because they can feel the moral bind that we have as modern men. So some queens will receive you owning your needs and meeting them as a breath of fresh air. Others, hey, they mightn't be so receptive in the beginning, but that's your masculine practice, is to own it, to meet those needs, and over time, unapologetically, let her know. It's like, baby, what's motivating me is, and bring her in. It's like, I don't want this pattern happening. I don't want this. I want to stop this inevitable every couple of weeks, every couple of months, me becoming, just going to asshole mode. I want to stop that. So I'm recognizing I need to keep my battery charged, and these are some of the needs that will help me do that. Keep, again, in the darkest of times, his vision lights the way. In the conversation with your queen, make the link for her. Baby, my vision is I want to eliminate this good boy, bad boy pattern. It's causing too much pain for you, too much pain for the kids, too much pain for me. I want to do whatever is necessary to stop that. So we can get this trend where we're just, the trend is continually up, up, up and away. It's like better and better and better over time. Then the second thing, like, there's me needs, that's you. And then what are the we needs? A lot of tension comes when, you know, these massive arguments happen. It's when a couple have been meeting the needs of everybody else. And it comes from the profoundly sick society. Again, what I said, my growing up, I've met so many guys. Nearly every guy recognized that. Yeah, we ended up en masse aligning our needs, curiosity in our nervous system on meeting the needs of other people. So what happens so often in marriage is couples, husbands, wives, are meeting the needs of everybody else but themselves, the kids, the neighbors, the people at work. Like, a husband can obsess about trying to meet the needs of his wife, and his wife is trying to meet the needs of the husband, but they're not meeting the needs of themselves individually, which is part one. And part two is, what do we need? What do we need to stay connected? What do we need to remain feeling that life and married life can be fun and fluffy and can actually be playful? What do we need to keep that spark alive that we know we have, we know it's there, but what do we need to nurture that flame from a little teeny tiny candle that just feels so fucking fragile? That's where, when ruptures happen, you'll find that the flame of connection feels very, very, very vulnerable to your queen and to you as well. So we end up not talking about it. Well, I encourage you to go, hey, baby, I want to lead this conversation. I want to stop this major rupture where, hey, I just build up frustration. I want to own it with you little and often. And I want to have a conversation about me meeting my needs, you meeting your needs as well, but us meeting our needs. What do we need as husband and wife, as lovers, as friends, as people that are doing this incredibly tough task of relating in marriage long term? What do we need? And let's schedule it in. You schedule it in. That's the ultimate behavioral prioritization. Don't fucking talk needs and then not schedule it in. Schedule your me needs and your we needs. It's a majorly powerful way to break that pattern that can cost you quite literally your marriage. Number three, one of the key things I challenge you, and like, this is what I did with myself, with my queen, and this is the part where I encourage you to gain the support of your queen. She can and will willingly become your greatest supporter, but she needs the formal invite from you, from a depth of sincere embrace of her, of her being the number one person in the world that can be of greatest support of you, because she knows you best. Our psyche finds that so challenging. Parts of her psyche, the wounded parts of her, don't want to share that intimacy, and we end up having multiple, like maybe hundreds of experiences of pain and suffering, but we rinse it all through cognitive distortions that we formed in childhood that make our wives become an enemy when they're not. They're wanting to help. My God, they'd give their left arm. Like, you know, it's like going down the high street. It's like, oh, can you go in and get the new dresses or hair? If you cut off your left arm, you know, but in return, we'll give you back a husband that owns his needs and, you know, is willing to see you as the number one, the person that is of greatest support of him as a human being on the planet. You know, like maybe it's a morbid example, it's just coming spontaneous. How many women in this culture would be going around with their left arm, without their left forearm? They'd be like, here, God, I'll chop it off myself if I could just go home and have a husband that looks at me and every single cell in his nervous system goes, you know, I'm actually after, I bang my head, baby. You got your arm cut off. Me today, I had an accident. I bang my head. I see you as my number one supporter. Finally, I actually get the game. All of the years when I was only perceiving you giving out to me, you criticizing me, you putting me down, you were trying to give me feedback to be the best man you know I can possibly be. Oh my God. We don't need our wives to chop their arms off, and we don't need to get knocked on the head, you know, risking our lives at work. We don't need that. But what we do need as men is to wake the fuck up and clean off our perceptual visor that has been perceiving our wives as the enemy. And our wives want to help us. And a lot of you could, like me, a number of years ago, spit vile if I heard this episode 6.5 years ago. I would have been sending an email to me, the me of today, the me of 6.5 years ago would be sending an email to the me of today going, you don't fucking know the wife I have. You don't know how vicious she is. You don't know how, you know, it's easy for you to say behind your fucking podcast microphone, you asshole. You don't know how bad she is. Like, I would have been irate with the me of today. Because I was lost in cognitive distortions that I had yet to breed through and unpack and realize, whoa, Mark, that's one majorly screwed up, distorted reality you've been playing inside yourself. Your queen is wanting to be your supporter, man. Point number three, after know the cost of the, after set a vision and recognize me needs and we needs. Point number three is recognize your frustration build-up signs. Pre-conflict, if you reflect upon it, and I encourage you to journal this. Number one, do a self-preparation of a journal and ask yourselves, like, what are the signs that my body and my mind give me in the lead up to a rupture? And please go beyond the trigger happy, oh, I don't know. Sit with it. You will notice, I when I've done this myself, I'm like, my body will give me tension. I'll end up getting aches. I'll perceive aches and pains. Pain in my head, neck, that comes almost inevitably before, in the lead up to these. I can own it now, but I know looking back, it's like, wow, that's a danger sign. Physical symptoms, you know, I know that my toilet habits in the morning, you might be eating now, you might want to even notice it, whether you're eating or not, but it's like sort of irritable bowel type things. I'd know that my body would be giving me signs of, hey, I'd poo 2, 3, 4 times in the morning. Anxiety, that spot, my tummy, my digestive system would let me know there was an add up of stress in my nervous system. And yeah, that would be a lead up sign for me. In my mental, in my thinking, when I'd start getting, my awareness would go to blame thoughts. Blame thoughts of, oh God, what my queen was doing, not doing. And it would get very sticky. It would get like, my awareness would camp out. I'd be driving in the car and my awareness would just be in, I'm bitching about my wife mode. My awareness goes into that blame area of my mind, and she's doing this and she did that, and then she's like, she said that to her mother, and then blah, blah, blah. I just blaming, complaining. That was an inevitable sign of things coming up. A level of discontent with my life in general. You know, a feeling of hopelessness, a feeling of, oh God, frustrations about money, frustrations about career, frustrations about just who I am as a man. Signs would be I'd lose my patience quicker. So it mightn't be a rupture in marriage yet, but I'd know if I lost my patience with the dog, I knew that that would be a sign of, God, my nervous system would sort of allow it, would allow myself lose the patience with the dog, because the poor dog at the time was like, there wasn't as much, I wasn't going to pay for a 3-hour conversation with my dog if I was a nasty dick with the dog. But that became a sign that I could recognize, going, wow, if I'm losing my patience with my dog, if I'm losing my patience with my kids. That was another thing. It was like, I'd lose my freaking patience with my kids when my wife was gone. And clearly I had to rectify that pattern as well. But losing my patience with my kids was a warning sign of, well, there's like the four horses of the marital apocalypse is going to hit my queen. If it's not today, it's going to be tomorrow or the next day. I could go into tons more signs of this. One of your greatest supporters in this can be your queen, your beautiful wife, and she will love you bringing the topic up in conversation long before you unleash the four horses of the apocalypse on her. It's like, baby, I want to have a conversation. I want to get to know my nervous system. I want to get to know how I work behaviorally. What signs do you notice come through me in the lead up to me being horrible with you, me going into an emotional shutdown, into a marital, a relational rupture with you? What are the things you notice? And she'll say, oh, you're immediately, she'll have a lot to tell you. Hey, when there's a pressure with money. Hey, when you're, I know a thing for me, it's like, hey, when your brother rang. My queen was highly, there was a great statistical chance that we'd have a rupture a few days after one of my brothers rang. It used to trigger me so much. They were deeply unsafe to be conversing with about anything close to my heart. So your queen will help you notice all of these things that she notices. She'll probably have a way more detailed view of the situation because she's able, it's easier from the outside for somebody to see this and to notice what the signs are. And when your queen does that, profusely thank her, express your gratitude, and then ask her to be your support, be your accountability partner in this. Baby, let her know, I'm doing this so I can figure and I can catch these signs, and then I will bring it up with you and go, hey baby, I can feel the buildup of these background frustrations. I want to speak about our marriage. I want to speak about our connection. And I will commit that if I notice these signs building up, I will lead a conversation with you before an unconscious rupture. However, if I don't notice and you are noticing, these are blind spots, and until I get skillful enough, and maybe I will always want this and need this support from you, can you please help me out by calmly and directly going, hey, do you know in that conversation there was one of those signs? I'm noticing that sign. You're experiencing pressure at work. You're coming home late more often. You're complaining about the pain in your back. It's like, hey, you know, give her the permission. Ask for her support in this. Please flag it to my awareness. And baby, I can tell you, if you tell me, then I'm going to take it sincerely, and we will create a conversation around that. And I want to nail this pattern. I don't want this pattern happening. I want you and I going 10% up the mountain. We slide. If we slide, it's only 1%, and we keep that forward momentum for, you know, happy, healthy, horny forevermore, both of us, individually, collectively, and as a family unit. That is what I am playing as a husband. I don't know, guys, but you approach your queen like this. You approach the wild woman that is your beautiful wife with that level of practice, with that level of sincerity, with that level of intentionality to embrace your marriage experience. I mean, success is written all over it. I leave the challenge with you to go with these three steps. It's available to every single one of you. Coming into landing, do you know that 96.4% of you that frequently listen to this podcast do not leave a review? If you've ever enjoyed our episodes, please, could you do me a favor and leave us a review? It helps this channel get in front of way more husbands. You leaving a review today can literally help save a man's marriage tomorrow. Your one review is that powerful. Any support in you leaving a review, I don't have words to express how much I would appreciate that review, guys. Coming into landing, as always, in perfect alignment with the mantra of this beautiful movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.